What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It is David and Isaac, one of our favorite times of the year. Unfortunately, it's a little bit earlier than we wanted it to be this year. We love the draft talk. We've been doing this. This is, man, is this year three or four that we've been doing this, Isaac? I don't remember, man.
I want to say year four.
I think that's right. I can't remember the first class that we covered together, but the draft has always been something that's been intriguing to me. And since we started the podcast, we're like, man, we need some content for the off season. Why not talk about the draft? We are going to do something a little bit different than what we typically do. We typically start with guys that are going to be in the Grizzlies range and save the top end guys for later in our draft coverage. But we're starting at the top. We've got one guy the Grizzlies worked out. What's his name? Slaw. He got Slaw in his name, so we're going to go ahead and pass on him. Because that tells you everything you need to know. Slaw is in the name. Out. Jalen Slauson, we're going to talk about him. He had a heck of a NCAA tournament. I think he put the country on notice about his skills and abilities in that matchup against Virginia. So the Grizzlies worked him out. We're going to cover him first, and then we're going to get into pretty well the consensus top four with Victor, Scoot, and the Thompson twins. So, Isaac, start us off, man. I watched some film on Slauson and just kind of done some studying. I had honestly, he was not a guy that was on my radar at all prior to the tournament. And I know it's risky, right? When you look at a guy that has a massive tournament, you don't want to put all of the stock whenever you're scouting this guy into what he done on the tournament. Because these guys can get hot at the right time and kind of inflate what their value would be. But I think if you go back and you watch tape on Slauson, there's plenty of stuff there to indicate that he's definitely NBA talent. What's your biggest like from him?
Yeah, when it comes to Slauson, man, when I saw the Grizzlies were working him out, and I remember him from the NCAA tournament playing for Furman, you kind of look back at his stats. He's a fifth-year senior. And I think that's the reason why you don't really see him on draft boards. I mean, draft, the NBA goes a lot on potential. And the Grizzlies have kind of marched to the beat of their own drum. We've seen this year in and year out, whereas you're talking about Xavier Tillman, who was a guy that we didn't even cover that year when we were doing our draft coverage. He wasn't really showing up on boards. And this guy, I know by attrition, no doubt, was starting for you in the playoffs and playing major minutes. It was a guy that wasn't even showing up on draft boards. Was you talking about Vince Williams Jr. Was another guy that wasn't showing up on draft boards last year. They drafted it on the two-way. And you can even take that back to Santi Aldama, a guy who they moved up to the 30th pick and selected. I think there was some rumors that I think Utah might have been wanted to take him in the 30s, but he wasn't a guy that was on our radar either. We didn't cover him during our draft coverage. And I think that year we covered probably even more than the consensus top 60 guys, and he wasn't one of the guys that they covered. So Grizzlies don't mind taking these older guys that are more ready to come in and contribute. And Jalen Slauson is not a guy that's really showing up on mock right now, but they have worked him out. Like you said, 6'7", 210, fifth-year senior out of Furman, 23 years old, so he's an older guy, 15.6 points, 7.1 rebounds, 3.2 assists, 1.5 steals, a block and a half a game, 39.4% from three on three attempts a game. Shot 78% from the free throw line and 55.6% from the field. So you can tell by those numbers that he's versatile, that he brings versatility. And if you go back and look at his stats, he got better and better each of his 5 years at Furman. As soon as I turned the tape on, man, I knew why the Grizzlies were interested. Definitely fits the MO because kind of some of the things I've laid out a second ago. He's super versatile. He'll likely be able to guard the 3-5, gets a ton of chase down blocks. I mean, he's a good defender, man. Beats guys at the rim, really has a really high defensive IQ, makes the right rotations and reads on defense. He's a dogged defender on ball, strong and extremely physical defender. He's a guy that actually likes to play defense and takes pride on that end. And you always like that. You like the guys. We had a guy here in Dylan Brooks that took pride on that end. And that is what this front office likes. They like those type of guys. They're scrappy, plays hard, doesn't always have the requisite size or physical traits, but they go out there and work hard and play hard, man. And Slauson definitely fits that. He guards really well in space. He moves his feet, makes it tough for guys to get clean looks off of it. He has quick hands, so that allows him to get steals on ball. Man, just I love it. When you watch him on defense, man, you just, again, man, he picks up full court. He's just one of those guys that loves to play on the defensive end. So when you look at his film, defense is the first thing that sticks out to you. I talk about him shooting 40% from three. You like that as well. But I think his best skill set on the NBA level, if he makes it, is going to be on the defensive end. Because, again, the versatility, he's only 6'7", but I think he's a guy that's going to be able to guard the 3-2-5. I think one of the drawbacks to him is he's a bit of a tweener. I think he's probably best suited to be a small ball four. And with that size that's kind of small, maybe he needs to get a little bit bigger. But he's a fifth-year senior. And that, like I said earlier, the NBA kind of drafts guys on potential. And you've been in college 5 years, seeing the fact that he's a little bit undersized, he's probably better as a four at 6'7", 204. That's not fantastic. So that's probably why you're not seeing him on draft boards. But when you watch him on film, man, there's a lot of things to like. Like I said, the versatility on defense and who he'll be able to guard, I think is what the biggest positive of him is. What did you see on film, David?
First off, I got to squash something, man. You said he's an older guy. This man's 23 years old. He's an older prospect, but it drives me crazy when guys get their age held against them. Like, if they're 28,
that's definitely what it is. That's definitely what it is.
Like, if they're 28 years old coming out of college, that's one thing, but the average retirement age for the NBA is like north of 36 years old. So at 23, he can have a 12 to 13 year NBA career, and that's still a really good career. Like, that's a good range. So I know that that's something just in general, that there's a lot more 19 year old guys getting drafted. And so people are like, oh, I don't know about a 22 or 23 year old. For me, I don't think there should be as much weight in that, because a guy coming in at 22, 23 years old can still give you a lot of years of peak production. And you never know, like, what's an 18 or 19 year old kid going to do? Not every 18 or 19 year old kid can come out and produce in their first few years. And so do you really end up with any more production from those kids than you do from a guy that's 22 or 23 years old? As far as what I saw on tape, there were a lot of stuff that you mentioned, but I like his ability to make decisions. If you watch, you can see him a lot of times with the ball in his hand late in the shot clock. And even when it is kind of a decision, like a last second, you have to make the decision.
Does a great job finding guys.
Yeah, like he seems to just kind of stay even keel. And that's not – some guys panic. And whenever you get the ball and you got 4 seconds to make a decision, some guys freak out and they take bad shots or they make bad passes. And I'm not saying that he doesn't make any mistakes, but he's pretty good, like, end of the shot clock decision maker. The thing that
– like, he's old. No, I'm just playing.
Oh, man. the thing that worries me about him is kind of what you mentioned, the undersized four thing. The Grizzlies have Kenneth Lofton Jr. They have Xavier Tillman. They, there's a lot of guys that are kind of undersized for that position. And while Slauson's footwork is good, there's not a lot of perimeter guys in the NBA I think he's really going to be able to keep up with. So, like, that 3-4, sometimes maybe a 5 he's going to hold up. It's going to depend on who the matchup is. But I don't know that there's a 2 in the league that I would be comfortable sticking him on. So it's kind of that, okay, yeah, the Grizzlies need size on the wing. He shoots 34% over his last two seasons. At Furman, he shot 34% from three. Is that enough? Like, is his shot enough floor spacing to give up that size? And for me, there are so many guys in this draft class that are 6'5 to 6'10 that have wing skills that, like, I understand, I get you know, what you said, where this seems like a Grizzlies guy because of the way that he plays. But I would prefer that they take somebody that's more slotted for a wing position than kind of what Slauson is. And that's, you know, it, guys like X can be, you know, we saw what X can do for this team and what he's capable of, and that's great. But the Grizzlies don't need more undersized fours on this team. The Grizzlies need spacing. And so to me, if you're taking a big, take a big. If not, you should be looking for spacing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that's probably one of the reasons why, outside of, like I said, man, it's not me saying this, but the NBA just shies away from these older prospects. Like, you see these guys that are seniors with big-time numbers, and they're not even on draft boards. And this is another guy who had big numbers. I mean, he actually shot 39.4% from three this season. But I guess for his career, I think that's the highs. I think he improved every season.
Yeah, he did.
But, I mean, offensively, I mean, he showed some point forward skills. He's a really good passer. I mean, he's a really good playmaker. But I think the fact that he's probably best suited for to be a small ball four, I think is what kind of makes it tricky to be a guy that they bring in on his roster. Now, I know with the new CBA, they're going to have three two-way spots. But, I mean, if you're talking about this, he's not super young. Again, I hate to keep going back to that. But putting him on a two-way and you put him down in South Haven, I mean, a guy that played in college for 5 years, I mean, if at 23, you don't think that there's a whole lot of potential there. And then again, that's the reason why they kind of view it this way, is once you've been in college for 5 years, you're 23 years old, you think a guy kind of pretty much is what he's going to be. There might be some upside there, but there's probably not a lot of upside. He's not going to get any quicker. I mean, he's probably best suited as a small ball four. That's a tough position to be in as a prospect. You don't want to be pigeonholed as a small ball for a guy that really needs to play the four at 6'7", 205, or whatever he weighs. I think that's what I got down here. You don't want to be pigeonholed in a position to where you're an undersized forward. That's just not a spot you want to be in. And I don't really see the way the roster shapes up right now. I really don't see a path for him being a main roster guy. Because, I mean, you already have a forward that you're developing in Vince Williams Jr. It's just doesn't seem like a guy that makes a lot of sense for their roster setup. Even on a two-way, you want to look at a guy saying, okay, this guy has a path to the main roster, and looking at it right now, unless something changes, he doesn't look like a guy that really fits that mold.
Yeah, and to me, I want to see, you know, because Vince is more of a wing, right? You know, they're around the same size as far as height, but Vince is much more fleet of foot. And he's going to be more likely to keep up with the wings in the league. So I'd rather see those minutes go to him. Although I honestly hope that we don't see any Vince Williams minutes at all next year because the roster is upgraded. But I'm not going to go down that path. It's a draft episode. But yeah, like for me, this is a guy like I think that there are going to be teams looking at him. I think he's going to end up getting drafted somewhere in the second round because of the skill set that he has. He can handle the ball very well for his size. He is a good decision maker. I'd say a plus playmaker. And with it, you know, those shooting numbers going up each year, that's going to translate in the NBA. But I just don't think that there is a slot for the Grizzlies to go out and draft a guy like that because of current roster composition. But, you know, who knows? They may make a liar out of me and draft him anyway. We'll see what happens. So, Isaac, let's move on to the kind of consensus top four here. You want to start at four and work our way to one, or how do you want to do this, man?
Yeah, I mean, we could start with the Thompson brothers, Ahmed and Asur Thompson. Crazy, man, to have two twin brothers slotted to go in the top five. Like, I can't imagine how proud those kids' parents are. And imagine the competitions they had growing up. To have two players of that level, elite basketball players, that's amazing, man. And I think that's just a really, really, really cool situation. But we'll start off with Asar Thompson, 6'7", 207 pounds. Difference between the two, I think Asar plays a little bit bigger. I mean, he only weighs 5 pounds, but more. But I think he plays a little bit bigger. I think Asar is more of a 2-3. I think Ahmed is more of a a combo shooting guard, point guard. But we'll start with Asar. Like I said, 20 years old, 6'7", 207, 6'10", wingspan. Averaged 16.3 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.3 blocks, 2.7 assists. Only shot 30% from the three-point range. And I've noticed that when you look at these kids from overtime elite or G League at night, they never really have good three-point shooting numbers. Like, I don't know if I've ever – all of these prospects, even – I don't even think Jaden Hardy was looked at as being a shooter. I think he was only shooting like 32% at G League at night. These guys, for some reason, never have good 3-point shooting numbers. I don't know what that is, but kind of the same with these two prospects. But defensive potential for Asar is the first thing that jumps off the field when you watch it for me. I think he can guard the 1-3 right now and maybe even possibly the 4 as he continues to get stronger. I mean, he's a flat out dog, man. In ISO defensive situations, he reacts really well and beats guys to spots. He likes to pick up way out on the floor and make guys work. A good shot blocker for a guy 6'7", average 1.3 blocks per game. Definitely brings some rim protection on the weak side. Super high defensive IQ. Just one of those guys, man, that just seems to instinctively know where to be on the floor. A big time athlete. Just like his brother, has excellent body control to improvise and find ways to finish at the basket. Scored almost 6 points per game in transition. He can take the basketball coast to coast, push it up the floor. I love him, man. I love both of these kids. I love what I saw on film. And again, I think Asar is more in that 2-3 mold. I think he'll play some small forward as well. And just a big time athlete. Again, man, really good defender. Needs to work on his jump shot. That's not really a strong suit of his, but finishing at the rim, being a playmaker, I think, and playing defense are things that I think translate immediately. I think, again, continuing to work on his jump shot is going to be the question with him going to the NBA, but he's definitely elite defensively and as an athlete, and those are two things that you can't teach. So you have those two skills coming in, man. I think you're in really good shape.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest differences between the two is like that shot form. And I feel like his form just looks a little bit smoother. There was a stretch close to the end of the season where he was shooting 34% from three. You saw his free throw percentage come up to where his brother struggled. His shooting numbers, as your shooting numbers, are better than I'm in. But one thing that you haven't mentioned is his playmaking ability. And you didn't really see him with the ball in his hand a ton whenever you're watching film. But when you did see him with the ball in his hands, he has the ability to pass his teammates open. And that's something, you know, the elite athleticism, the great point of attack defender, the great help side defender, the other tools that he has, you keep those, you hone those. And then you start working on some of these secondary tools and that playmaking ability as a secondary playmaker on a team that has a good primary point guard. Having a guy on the wing that can help create for his teammates is going to be huge. I think this kid can play straight out of the gate. Like day one, he's going to be able to go out and defend NBA level talent. And I feel like watching the film, he wants to be that. Like, he wants to be a good defender because you can see him. Isaac talked about him picking people up, you know, pretty far out there. Like, as soon as they're bringing it across half court, he's out there picking them up and putting pressure on them. There were a number of times in film where you see him kind of, you know, slap away and get a steal. He plays the passing lanes really well. So a lot of good things defensively from him. And I think when you're talking about him and his brother, the offensive game is really where both of them are going to have to work on it. And now I'm in is more of a point guard, and he's a very good initiator. We're going to talk about Scoot and Isaac and I were kind of talking a little bit off air and how I'm in is a guy that can come in and operate an offense right off the bat, but his shot is not that great. And then when you look at his form, Amin's form, it's very clunky. Like it's not, if he had to get a shot off quickly, I don't know if he could do it. And if he did, I think it would be pretty ugly. And that's something, just the mechanics of his shot, it's very, the gather is slow. Yeah. And that's something you can, you see guys that come into the league that have kind of a weird form, and then they work with coaches and make small adjustments, and they're able to fix that. So these guys are young enough. I don't think that that's going to be a massive issue moving forward, but is it ever going to transition into, you know, I'm in shot when I got it here, 25% from three this year in the overtime elite league. Are you going to see him be a 35 or 40% 3-point shooter in his career? I don't know that you'll ever see that happen, but his elite athleticism and his ability to read the floor and pass his teammates open, those things are going to get him to the next level to where he can be successful, and being able to develop that mid-range game to where he can be a threat in the pick and roll a little bit more is going to be what really accelerates him from being a good role player to an elite level player at the NBA level.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's going to be interesting to me, because we've never really had any guys from overtime elite to go this high in the draft. It's going to be interesting to see how that translates, because I still don't have a good grasp on that level of basketball. Like, I don't know. The competition level is always a question with overtime elite, and even with the G League. I definitely think the G League is a higher level of competition. So it'll be interesting to see how these guys translate. But I think these guys would have been talented anywhere. I think they would have shown, whether they went to the G League, overtime elite, or college, or wherever they went, I think they would have been big time players on any of those levels. One thing I do like about Asar is I think he has big time rebounding potential. I mean, he averaged 7 rebounds a game. And I think offensive rebounds and putbacks are something that I think that he could be really adept at on the next league. And you talked about his passing and playmaking. He has a super high IQ. Like you said, man, makes quick decisions when reading the defense as a playmaker. He penetrates in the lane, man, he draws double team, kicks out the guy, spotting up, and finds the cutters. I mean, he just does a really good job. And Asar's shot definitely looks better than Amin's. I think his shot is definitely far along, but even his is not consistent. I think he needs to get more consistent, because with both of them right now, and I know we kind of talking about both of them midway here, they both are more finishing at the rim right now. I think Asar's mid-range is a little bit better than Amin's right now, but that's definitely something they got to work on. But the elite athleticism, the passing, the IQ, I think all of those are things that are translate from day one. But as far as playing off the ball, because I think both of those guys, especially Amin, is going to have to do that at some point, because I think he's more of a combo than a pure point. He's really going to have to work on that shot, because he's not great in ISO situations. When he gets downhill, he can get to the basket. But if he's trying to create off the dribble, that's not something that he's really great at. Same thing with Asar. They're not really great in ISO situations, and teams really go under the screen on them, and they don't give them a lot of respect. They kind of sag off of them when they're out there, and those are things that they're going to have to work on. I think if there's any weakness in their game, I think that would be it. But there's a reason why they're projected to go top five, man. Again, the elite athleticism, you see that. You see the defensive potential from Asar on tape, and I think that's something that's going to translate day one. Again, I think he can – guard the 2-3-4 from day one. And I just love guys that like to play defense, because I mean, that's something that some guys, they just don't have. They want to play offense. They'll reluctantly play some defense. But if you have a guy that wants to go out there and pick up full court, man, that's a big time positive. So I'm a fan of his, man. And I think he's going to be a good player wherever he lands.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, like I said, that he had that stretch, Azur had that stretch toward the end of the season where you saw his numbers start to climb. Where I'm in, his numbers have still, like, not that there was no improvement, but his percentages just aren't there. So it's something, the difference in the form, I think, is really where you're seeing it. You see Azur get the shot off quicker. It just looks a lot better. The mechanics of his shots are a lot better. We've kind of bounced back and forth between these two, essentially because there are a lot of similarities in their game.
The size,
the athleticism. Amin had a 40-inch vertical at overtime elites measurements. Azir had a 38-inch vertical at 6'7". Like, it's insane how similar these guys are. You know, like, twins a lot of time are very similar. But, you know, their skill sets may not be exactly the same. And these guys are really, really close whenever it comes to that. I think the separation, Azir's shot, and then I think Amen is just a better playmaker as far as getting his teammates open. Both of the guys can pass the ball very well, but there was some stuff from Amen on tape where I was like, yeah, that's an NBA pass. And having the IQ to see some of the stuff that he sees, like the vision that he sees, that's not something that you see in every prospect. We're seeing more and more big guards. Like, you go back, Cade Cunningham at 6'8", 6'9", with his ability to pass the ball. And then these guys at 6'7", it seems like we're getting more big guards that can really just zip the ball. Like, they're making plays that typically you're looking at a 6 foot, 6 foot, 1 inch guy making this type of play. And not that the game is evolving any more than what it has really, but it's just weird to me that the skill set that we see from Amen is that of more of a smaller guard minus the shooting.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that we've seen, like you said, Kay Cunningham. That's why I always talk about Penny Hardaway being so ahead of his time, because you definitely didn't see it back then. Guy 6'7", 6'8", out there playing point guard and high IQ offensively, passing the ball the way they do. And now you've seen a couple guys. You've seen Kay Cunningham. See these two guys coming into the league kind of in that same mold. And it's interesting to see if that's going to be something that we see a lot going forward. But I mean, one thing that really stood out to me, man, is his first step. I mean, he can go from stand still to full speed on a dime, man. It's just elite, the way he changes speeds. And he's an above-the-rim athlete. A lot of that kind of reminds you of Ja Morant. I know he's a much bigger guard, but the way he can get by guys, he's shifty in the lane, and that elite athleticism and finishing ability definitely reminds me of him, man. He really excels in the open floor. So he's always a lob threat. I mean, you throw it over the top to him. Really moves without the basketball really well. Has quick hands on defense. Like I said, sounds like a broken record, because a lot of these things are the same things you say about Asar. He's a pest on the ball defensively. He likes to pick up full court as well. I mean, just, you can tell these guys are twins, man. They've trained together because they have a lot of the same traits. They have a great feel for the game. As a playmaker, they both like to push the ball in transition, whether they finish it themselves or they like to push it ahead. If you have a guy trailing out to the basket, they find that guy up ahead to finish at the rim. Just a lot of similarities between these two guys. What I saw, I got it in my notes here. Great no-look passer. I noticed that on film. Puts a lot of zip on the basketball. You kind of mentioned that a second ago. Penetrates into the lane. Does a really good job of reading the defense. And makes the right play. Really high IQ. He converted at a 74.3% clip at the rim, and 59.2% at the rim in half court, which is, those are absolutely ridiculous numbers for our men. I mean, just an elite finisher at the rim. He can finish with both hands, which is a big plus. A lot of times guys can only go finish with one. He can finish with both. So he's ambidextrous. So I think that makes him a really good prospect. I mean, both of these players, they're going to be really, really good players in this league. Have any question about that? But again, I think the perimeter and ISO skills are the main things that they need to work on. And as you said, I think Asar is even more ahead than Amen. Amen is mostly projected to go first. But I mean, you could put these two players in a basket. And I'm not sure if I wouldn't go Asar first. I think overall, Asar might be the more talented of the two, but I think Amen being that the point guard-ish in that mold, I think that kind of is the reason why a lot of people see him over Asar. But, I mean, I think both of these guys are going to be really, really good players in this league, and I understand why they're projected top five. I like them both. The big question for me is, and I'm going to continue to watch this as time goes on, is overtime elite and ignite guys, especially going this high. Because these guys haven't really gone this high in the draft. I don't think we've seen any go top five. We've had guys that have gone lower in the first round, but it's just going to be interesting to see how they translate. Obviously, Asar and Amin were featured in overtime and elite. A lot of times with G League at night, you will have those guys come in and they're not really the featured guys. They'll have some older guys on their team, some guys that have played some time in the NBA, and they'll get more minutes. Sometimes they even come off the bench and then they go in the NBA, and it's interesting to see how they translate. We have Jaden Hardy in Dallas who kind of came on late in the year. We'll see how he continues to develop, but that's something that I've been really intrigued by. In overtime elite even more, because I think the G League is probably a higher level of competition than the teams they play. But now we have two guys going to top five, so you really have on display like how that translates. So I'm definitely going to be interested to watch that and see and be interested in their transition into the next level.
Yeah, I was trying to see. Well, I think that. Sorry, man. Who was the guy that went to the Spurs from overtime elite?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I was trying to think of his
Barlow,
name.
Dominic Barlow. Yeah. But you know, we haven't seen anybody from the overtime elite league really get to the NBA and flourish yet. And Barlow is like, he was cooking in the G League. He had some monster games in the G League for the Spurs G League affiliate. So the talent was there for him. And I think that these guys are obviously a step above where he was last year, but there are a lot of new paths to the NBA. And I think it's, I don't know that it's any tougher, but it's definitely like, it's an added level, like an added layer when you're trying to break down what these guys are doing. Like, elite talent at the college level is going to rise above, and you're going to see them kind of flourish at the college level, and NBA level players are just going to be a step above the rest of the guys around them. These other guys in the overtime elite league are college level talent. How many of these guys are NBA level talent? I think, you know, just by volume alone, you're going to have more NBA level talent at the college level. And I think over these next probably 4 or 5 years, we're really going to be able to tell, okay, which way is going to be the best way for these guys to go? And can you count on what they're doing at the overtime elite level to translate to the NBA level? And for these two specifically, their elite athleticism alone is like, they are NBA level athletes.
Yeah, no question.
That they need to work on whenever they get to that level, but there's no doubt that these guys are NBA level talent.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Both of them big time above the rim athletes. I think defensively, I think both of them will translate almost immediately as well. They're just some guys that you can watch even on a lower level that you know, okay, they'll be able to guard on the next level. So I don't think there's any question about that. I think their ever evolving offensive game is what you're going to need to watch from those two guys. I think Amin, like I said, right now, is basically defense, finishing at the rim and playmaking. I mean, he's not going to give you much day one on the outside. I mean, I think it's going to be a little rough for him on the perimeter. Like you said, his shot is a little wonky. And sometimes you can fix that. I mean, there have been guys that have come into the league with some weird shots. I mean, Sean Marion is a huge example of that. Somehow he became a better shooter. I mean, it wasn't great. It got better as time went on. He became a good three-point shooter. But his shot was still wonky, but it was better than it was when he first came in the league. And sometimes you get into the NBA with these shooting coaches, man, and they can really help you out there. Because I think with their athleticism and the things they can do, if they can develop that jump shot, kind of similar to what we talked about with Ja Morant, if he could ever develop that mid-range and get that outside shot a little bit more consistent, he'd be unguardable. And that's kind of the same thing with Amin. If he could develop that mid-range more and that perimeter shot, he's going to be a guy that you really can't guard, especially at 6'7". I mean, you're talking about 6'7". He's going to be going up against guys 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", most nights. I mean, he's going to be hard to deal with. So he has a skill set, man. If he could just get that jump shot, man, to be even, I don't think he'll ever be an elite level shooter, but if he can get it even decent, I mean, he's going to be really, really, really hard to guard.
Yeah, I always go back to, like, when I'm looking at guys that came into the league that struggled shooting the ball, that developed into a pretty good shooter by the end of their career. Kemba Walker is a guy, when he first came in the league, man, he struggled hard. Like, I don't remember how many seasons it was, but it was for at least the first maybe two or three, I think. He was statistically the worst impact shooter on any team in the league because he was high volume and missing a lot from three. And then you saw him gradually getting better. He put the work in. And so it's all about work ethic. And that's something that these guys, the Twins have been praised for, is they are not afraid to work. They're coachable. That's something, you know, I feel like a lot of kids get told how great they are through the AAU circuit and they become uncoachable because their head gets so big and they think that they know everything.
Yeah, they don't put it into work anymore.
Yeah, and that's, I was watching a video and Kent Bazemore was talking about how he's like, I've been in the league for 10 years and these guys match the athleticism of some of the best players that I've played up against in the NBA and they're coachable. And that's something I see it on a local level, kids that play AAU ball that mouth their coach and won't listen and think that they're above that. And then you see guys like Marvin Bagley, you see guys like Ben Simmons that have this elite level talent, but their camp will never give them a reality check. And that has seemed to be a problem a couple of different times. And so it's good to hear guys that have this level of talent do not have the ego issues and they are coachable.
Yeah, you could be a blessing and a curse. It could be fantastic because it keeps these guys playing basketball pretty much year round, but you also, these guys get built up so high that they sometimes get to a point to where they feel like, oh, well, I'm the best player in the world and nobody can tell me anything. I can't get better at anything. I'm elite. And then you get to the NBA, you realize that is not the case, man. You got to keep working. I mean, you look back at the elite players, guys like Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan and LeBron, these guys never stop working. I mean, there's never a point to where you get to where you feel like, okay, well, this, I'm done. Like, I don't have to work on my game. I don't have to hone my craft anymore. I'm done, man. You gotta have that drive, man, to keep working. And a lot of times these kids get blown up so high when they're young, they just feel like they don't have to put that work in anymore. And that's how it can be a bad thing.
All right, man. We've stretched the talk on the Twins. We kind of mixed them, like the talking about them kind of mixed both of them in, but rest assured, these are two different prospects. Their skill sets are very similar. One excels at initiating offense, running the pick and roll. The other one is a better shooter at this point, but he still has playmaking skills. Two different prospects, two prospects that are definitely worthy of a lottery pick. Let's move on to who I feel like.
Yeah, I'll let you take the lead on this one.
He's the surefire number two pick, in my opinion, unless you end up with some sort of wonky circumstance where the Pistons end up with number two. And because of their guard situation with Ivy and Cade Cunningham, I don't think that they take him. But anybody else in the league is taking Scoot Henderson too. And I said it earlier, the more I watch film on this kid, the more I think that I would take him over Victor.
Man,
and it's not a knock on Victor because Victor's game is incredible. You watch him, like we're gonna get to Victor before we wrap up the show. But Scoot's 6'2", 6'9" wingspan, so the height is not gonna be an issue because of that wingspan. He's gonna be able to guard guys at this level if he puts in the effort. That's kind of a question mark: is what's he gonna do defensively in the league? Crazy explosive athlete, great decision maker. His mid-range game is going to absolutely wreck NBA drop defense. It's going to kill it. he can manipulate the pick and roll right now better than a lot of guys that have been in the league multiple years. His ability to pass the ball, the live dribble passing, he can put the ball anywhere that he wants it. And some of these skills that you're seeing with him running the pick and roll in the G League, those are 100% day one going to translate at the NBA level. And I think personally that he's a franchise changing player. This is a guy, you know, let's say Houston, for example. Houston right now does not have a true point guard on that roster.
I don't want to see it, man.
If Scoot ends up in Houston, that's nasty. With the amount of talent they have, that it's going to be disgusting down there. That team is going to go from lottery to a playoff team, I think, immediately based off of what he's going to be able to do with this offense. And again, like I said, I feel like the more that I watch him, I would take him over Victor, but I know that I'm going to be in the minority on that, and that's okay. I just have reservations about Victor and what he's going to be able to do at the next level.
Yeah, that's a scorching hot take. Like, you're definitely going to be in the minority on that one, but I definitely agree with you, man. Scoot is tremendous talent. I have this written down in my notes here. Absolute terror when teams play drop coverage. He's going to absolutely murder drop coverage. But a lot of things you said, man, just an insane athlete. Has crazy hops, great burst. I mean, he's really good at changing speeds. A la a guy that we call 12 here in Memphis. Almost impossible to stay in front of defensively, man. You can't stay in front of him. Like, that first step, I mean, he's just going to – if he catches you flat-footed, man, it's barbecue chicken. He's at the rim before you can turn around, man. But he's fun to watch in the open court, man. He finishes high above the rim, always a lob threat in transition. One of his go-tos, he has this in-and-out dribble that he uses to get past defenders. I saw him use that a lot on film. Doesn't need a screen to get past his man. If, like I said, if he catches you flat-footed, I mean, he's just dribble right past you. Really good as a cutter off the ball. Gets off the ground quickly, which allows him to challenge his shots at the rim. He's a good shot blocker for a guy 6'2". Really good with the pull-up midi, as you talked about, and I think that's the thing that separates him from our men. If you're looking at the top point guards in the draft, I think his shooting is much farther along than our men's, even from the perimeter. He's a better shooter. He's not great from the perimeter, but he's improved a lot. If you kind of watch him from early on in the season, he really improved on his three-point shooting and pull-up jumpers as the season went on. So I think that is what really separates him from our men. I don't think – there's really not any question. Like, if you're looking for a point guard, you're top of this draft, I think you're definitely going to go with Scoot Henderson over the two. I just think his game is far along. He also has the floater. I mean, he has this like push shot floater. He does it all the way out to the free throw line. I mean, he can really get to that pretty easily. Elite body control. I mean, he can stop on a dime to pull up for the midi or the floater after driving full speed. After, like I said, absolute terror, man. When you play drop coverage on him, it's barbecue chicken. Like you said,
it's done, man.
If you have
a big that's dropping and he's melting you with that mid range, his ability to change speeds, it's so insane. Like, if that big tries to cheat him because he's been knocking down that mid range, he's gonna blow right past that big and get to the basket. Like, he's crazy fast with the basketball. Like, a guy that I think he didn't end up panning out too well in the NBA. But Ty Lawson at North Carolina, which, you know, like he had a decent NBA career, but he wasn't like, I thought he was going to be a star because of his ability to change speeds with the ball.
He was pretty good for a while, and he just fell off. I don't know what happened with him, but
Scoot's ability, like to change speeds at mid range, he's going to make people pay. He doesn't have. Like, the perimeter shot is not there yet. He shot, I think, 28%. Yeah, 28% on five attempts this season. That's not going to cut it, right? You're going to need that number to get better. But the fact that mid-range kind of got better as the season went along makes me think he's going to be able to stretch that out eventually. It's just going to take him a little bit of time. But even if he doesn't develop that three-point shot – his mid-range game and his ability to get to the bucket is going to be enough to carry him for a long time in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like we say here with Ja Morant. If he develops that mid-range game, even at the three-point, like if he's shooting 33, 34, 35% from three, if he develops that mid-range game, it's over. Like, you can't guard him. And that's, if you like Ja Morant coming into the league, you should definitely like Scoot Henderson, because, like I said, the Ja didn't come in to get into the league with mid-range. Scoot already has the mid-range game down. I think that's a big plus. And if Ja translates, I think Scoot will translate as well. I don't think there's any question. His bust potential is almost zero, but just because of that mid-range game and the elite athleticism and the fact that the way that he can get to the rim, there's like 0% chance to me that he's not going to at least be good in the league. I don't think there's any question. I mean, one thing that I do like about him a lot is he's patient. When teams go under the pick and roll, he's super poised and under control at all times. It just doesn't seem like he ever gets sped up. Like, you see a lot of these guards, they get out of control and get sped up. That's something that you don't really see from Scoot. He's really poised and really under control. And he's deadly off ghost screens with shooters. I mean, that's something I saw. And he's the leader finding spot-up shooters off of dribbles, off the dribble. I mean, he's the leader finding spot-up shooters off the dribble. He keeps the ball on the screen, keeps his dribble alive. If you put in with a big man that can finish, man, there it's going to be almost impossible to guard. I mean, he's a fantastic passer in the pick and roll. I mean, he gets into the NBA with a really good big. Like, if he was playing with somebody like, say, Anthony Davis, man, I know that's not going to happen, but if you could put him with a big man like that, man, I don't know what they would average together. So he goes to Houston, man. You get it put in with Jalen Green, man. I know that's a little bit undersized, but they got talent down there. I think Sengun would really benefit from having a guy like that. I think he's going to be a tremendous talent. Again, I think if Ja Morant translates, I don't see any way Scoot Henderson doesn't translate. Not saying he's necessarily going to be Ja Morant, but he's coming in with that mid-range, and that's something that we're still trying to find here a few years later here with Ja Morant. So Scoot's going to be a big-time player, man. I don't think there's any question. I'm not taking him over Victor. I'm not there yet, but as a prospect, man, I think he has a chance to be, like you said, a franchise-level player. I don't think there's any question about it.
I think, to me, going back a couple years and even moving forward a couple years, any other draft besides this one, Scoot goes number one overall, in my opinion.
Like, yeah, I think, I agree with that.
If he was eligible to go last year, I'm taking him over Banchero. And that's, you know, like, Banchero was great this year. Like, it's not a knock. You don't have to tear down the other guys. It's just what he has. And he's young. He's typically a guy his age is not going to be able to absorb contact the way that he is. That he's not going to manipulate the pick and roll the way that Scoot is doing it. And he's doing it at an insane level for this age. So when he gets to the NBA, that's already there. And then you have upside from there. And it's like, okay, what is this kid's upside? Where is he going to be? Is he going to end up, you know, like, is he an all-star player? I said he's a franchise-changing player. Does he end up being one of the best guards to ever play the game? And I don't like putting that kind of weight on a player this early in their career, but he definitely has the tools that it wouldn't surprise me if we're 8 to 10 years down the road having that conversation about Scoot.
And he also has the confidence. That's another thing that I like about him. When you watch him in interviews, you can tell that he's a dog. He's one of those players that he wants to be the best player on the court. And there's a lot of players that don't have that. And that's something that he has at a young age. I mean, he's only 19 years old. And I think that a lot of times when you match that with the skills, the bag that he has, I think it's going to be a hard time seeing him not reach his ceiling. And if he reaches his ceiling, we're talking about something crazy. I don't think there's any question.
All right. So we're talking about ceilings. We're going to finish up this episode with the guy that has possibly the highest ceiling ever. And Isaac, I took the lead with Scoot, so I'll throw this to you because I said that I would take Scoot over him. That there are a lot of things to like about Victor Wembanyama. there are some holes in his game that I think get overlooked because of his size and skill set. And so that's what kind of gives me reservations about him. But tell everybody what they need to know about Mr. Wibinyala.
Yeah, man. I'm, like I said, even before I start breaking down film on him, I was already a huge fan. I mean, you know how crazy this is. He's looked at as being one of the best prospects ever. I mean, we throw the word generational around a lot, but when it comes to Wembanyama, man, I think if he stays healthy, I think this real. I said earlier, gotta go with my comments last year and then kind of rib David a little bit. I said he's what Chet thinks he is. But to me, I think that's real. But you talked about 7'5", 220 pounds, 8-foot wingspan. He is only 19 years old. I think the ultimate unicorn, that's what I call him. I think we've got a lot of guys unicorns. I think he might actually be the unicorn. You look up rim protection in the dictionary, and there's a picture of Victor Wembanyama. I mean, he blocks shots everywhere. Chase downs, isolations, help sides. I mean, he's an absolute machine. Blocks shots on the perimeter. Doesn't even have to jump on a lot of them at 7'5", man. He's flat-footed blocking shots. Completely alters and wrecks and the offensive, the other team's offensive game plan at times, man, because if you're an opposing team, you have to be conscious of where he is at all times because he's blocking shots from everywhere. He covers so much ground, man, with even when he looks like he's beat. I mean, he's still able to come back and recover and block shots just because of his length and his strides. He may be one of the best pick-and-roll defenders I've ever seen. He's so long, like I said, that never really out of the play. It's just scary stuff, man, when you watch it on film. Has a really, really, really smooth jump shot, possibly to best for a guy outside that's 7 foot outside of Dirk. I don't think I've ever seen a guy at 7 foot with a jump shot smooth as his. Really excels in ISO situations, creating space for the pull up with his dribble. He also uses the moves to be able to get to the basket and he gets there, but he gets there quickly at 7'5". Because I said, man, the strides that he takes, it doesn't take him but a couple steps to get to the basket. If he ever gets to the basket, he's going to finish. I mean, not many guys are going to stop somebody 7'5" at the basket. So you got to try to stop him before he gets there. And if he gets to the basket, he's pretty much money. He pretty much do it all, man. The turnaround, the step back, the sidestep jump shot. I mean, there's really no bottom to this man's bag. I mean, honestly, I don't know how you guard him. I mean, when I watch him on film, I just think about both thighs aren't going to be able to keep up with him because he's going to pull you away from the basket. And then on the inside, I think it's 7'5". I mean, there's not a lot of 7'5 guys in the league. I mean, you might be able to push him off the spot. But I just think the reason what separates him from Chet for me is I trust his perimeter skills more. I know David said his that Chet's three-point percentage was higher, but I think that was a small sample size. I trust if I had a guy, one of these guys hit a three, it would be Victor Wembanyama over Chet. I would take him nine times out of 10 over him, man. I just don't think Chet doesn't have the perimeter skills. I think Chet's going to have to do a little bit more on the inside. I think Victor could live on a perimeter if he had to. I mean, this man has a pull-up runner three-point shot in his bag. I mean, what are we talking about, man? Like, what he does on the defensive end and his bag on the offense, we just never seen anything like it. Like, it's a real unicorn, and I just don't know who you guard him with because fours are going to be too small and he's going to be too quick for fives to guard him. There's just – I mean, whatever team gets him, man, he's going to be a problem. He's going to be a terror for the league. I tweeted that out earlier. The only thing that can stop Victor for me is injury. Anytime you have a guy that tall at 7'5", you're worried about lower body, leg, knee injuries and things like that. But if he stays healthy, man, I think the generational word with him is real. I think day one, he's definitely on the defensive end, day one going to be able to do what he does. And I just don't know how you guard him. I know you talked about Scoot, and we've seen transitional guards come in the league. But guys with the skill set that Victor has at 7'5", we've just never seen it. We've never seen a 7'5 guy that can move the way he does, move his feet the way he does, has a smooth jump shot the way he does. It's just, I think he's a generational star. And the only thing for me that can slow him down is injuries. I don't have any questions about his game translating to the next level.
Yeah. And I'm not even like the injury thing with him is not something. He's been healthy and you have people. I feel like people get generic with it, right? Like, oh, well, he's tall and skinny, so he's going to be injury prone. Like, by the time the playoffs finish over there in the league that he's in, I think he's going to be close to 50 games played this year. So, like, yeah, 50 is not 82, and I do understand that. But I'm not overly concerned with that, man. He moves his feet better than most guys his size, and that's something. He's definitely more fleet of foot than what Chet is. That's what allows him to make mistakes on the defensive end and be able to recover from it. I just wonder, when you get, you know, the step up to the NBA, there's going to be an adjustment there for him, because the speed is going to be slightly faster. Is he going to be able to, if he makes a mistake on defense in the NBA, is he going to be able to make that adjustment fast enough to get back? And I think eventually the answer to that is yes. Is it going to be day one? I don't know. But he definitely has a lot of stuff, that his ability to handle the ball for his size. He can rebound and run it like that. That's not going to be an issue for him. But the perimeter stuff, like, for as much as you crapped on Chet last year, it surprises me that you're giving him so much credit, because Chet's 3-point shooting numbers, it's not just little bit better. It's 10% better.
A slow release, man.
He's 800 foot tall. Ain't nobody blocking it. It don't matter if it's slow.
I don't know. I just don't trust. If I had to take one of them to hit a 3-pointer, I'm still taking Victor. That's me. Like, I don't care what those numbers say. I've watched Victor. I just feel like he's a better perimeter player than Chet. Like, I feel like Chet is more of inside out. I feel like Victor is more really a wing that's 7'5". And I don't feel like Chet's a wing that's 7 foot. Like, I don't feel like that. I feel like Chet is a guy that can hit a shot if he's open. Like, most of those threes that he hit at Gonzaga were wide open threes. When guys closed out on him, he didn't hit a lot of those shots. He really only took them when he was wide open. That's why I think a lot of Chet's 3-point shooting, I don't really believe in it. We'll see next year, but I don't believe he's as good of a 3-point shooter as people are making him out to be, because again, the sample size was small and most of those shots were wide open. Like, I know you say nobody can block them, but if you could put a guy out there, it gives you something to think about, even if they can't block the shot.
Yeah, I get it, man. I understand you have reservations about it. And that's just where I am with Victor. And it's not, I don't have so many reservations that if I had the number one pick, I'm going to be mad that my team took Wibanyama, because you don't. Like, if you're the GM, you take him with the number one pick. It's just what you do. And I just, he's, his decision making, he's at like 3.5 turnovers a game, playing with the professionals in the leagues that he's in right now. And I talked about the speed of the NBA. If he's making turnovers in that league, he's making bad decisions in that league, those are going to be amplified at the NBA level. And so my thing is, I think that Wibanyama is going to be successful in the NBA, but I think that there's a lot of people that think he's just going to come over here and cook from day one.
Man, I do.
I'm not buying that, man. I'm not buying that at all. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I've been wrong on plenty of things before, and I'll be wrong again. But I just think that the adjustment in the speed of the game is going to be his biggest struggle. Like, is he going to be able to shoot the ball? Yeah, shooting the ball, that's going to translate. He's still going to be able to dribble the ball. He's still going to be able to do a lot of the things that he's doing over there. But the poor decision-making, I think, gets amplified at the NBA level, because the athletes are bigger, stronger, faster. And I think that the mistakes that he makes on the defensive end that he can recover from in the league that he's playing in right now, there's going to be some of those that he doesn't recover from early in the NBA. I think that he gets better at that as the season goes along. And maybe even by the end of his first season, he has that figured out. But I just don't think that he's going to be a guy that's lighting the world on fire straight out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree with you on the turnovers. I think some of the stuff he does, I kind of wrote some notes down here. I wrote down, being as talented as he is, there are a lot of times where, again, he's so much more talented than those guys that he just tries stuff. Like, I watched this on film. Like, he just does stuff that he maybe he won't try when he gets to the NBA, but he's so much better than those guys. He does a lot of things that just crazy stuff that because he can do it, he can get away with it. And I think sometimes that leads to turnovers. Now, if he tries to do that same thing in the league, he is going to turn the ball over, because if he's averaging three there and he tries to do some of that wild stuff, it's definitely going to lead to turnovers in the NBA, because those guys are bigger, like you said, faster, stronger, and more able to defend him than those guys in that league. But it also depends on what team he goes to. I mean, if he goes somewhere, you look at those teams, obviously he goes to Detroit, none of those teams really have a great point guard. Because I was going to say, if you put him with a great point guard, he might not have to do some of the things and create as much as he does out on the perimeter if he's playing with a better point guard. But I just think, man, that with his length, like you talk about the recovery when he makes mistakes on defense, I think he'll be able to do that in the NBA. I just think he's so long at 7'5" that he still will be able to recover, because it just doesn't take much. I mean, his strides are so long. He takes one step and he's back into play. Like it's crazy, man. Like I watched it on film. I was already a huge fan, man. And watching it on film, I've just become even a bigger fan, but we'll see. But I just think he's a generation. Man, I can't even talk tonight.
Generational talent.
Generational talent. And I think he's in the truest sense of the word. I think we say that about a lot of players, but I think it's real with him. Like, I think we can look up 8-10 years down the line, again, if he doesn't suffer any significant injuries, where we could be talking about another GOAT, like we're talking about. We're talking about guys like Kareem and like Ted. I mean, I think he has that type of talent. It's nuts. Oh, the ceiling for this kid.
Yeah, and again, my take on Scoot was not at all a knock. I talked about some negatives for Wembanyama, but I want to do that, because if you watch film and all you want to look at is a positive on any of these four guys that we talked about, like, there's a lot. Like, you can watch and you're like, man. But so some of the mistakes that these guys are making is youth. Like the 19 years old, some of the stuff that he's trying, after you're a veteran, after you've been in the league 4, 5, 6, 7 years, you're not going to try some of that stuff anymore. You don't want to hear what the coach has to say. You don't want to make your teammates mad. Like, there's things that happen as you age in the game that we will not see from these guys as they're in the league a little bit longer. But I think whoever gets pick number one and pick number two in this draft is going to be very happy, because I think either one of these guys can be franchise changing. And I'm just hoping that it's not the Spurs. Don't want to deal with that.
Pop's going to go 20 more years. He gets Victor.
Yeah.
Or Scoop.
Yeah. But anyway, that's our five for today. We will try it. Like, it's not a guaranteed. So, you know, this is a Grizzlies podcast. This is the Sports Ethos Grizzlies podcast. It's not a guarantee that we're going to talk about prospects every episode that the Grizzlies could possibly get. We're going to go through, we're going to knock out as many as we can. If there are guys that they work out and we know that they worked them out, we will talk about them along the way. But, you know, if you followed us over the last few years, whenever we're doing this, you know, we're 50, 60, 70, 80 prospects deep by the time this thing is over. So we're going to try and bring you as much coverage of these draft prospects as we can. We will get you as much Grizzlies related content as we can. But it's good to know about these guys. These are going to be guys that the Grizzlies are going to be facing. We're going to see them at the FedEx Forum, you know, and some of these guys are going to be in the league for years to come. So, you know, getting to learn about them early is good. If you like the game, you like basketball, you're staying tuned in with us, so you must like it a little bit. We appreciate that. But just keep in mind, even though it is a Grizzly show, we will not always have a prospect that is Grizzlies related, and that's just going to That's going to be how it is this year, because to be honest with you, if the Grizzlies did not make a single pick in this draft, I would be super happy. I don't think that's going to be the case, but I would love it if they just move these picks to make some upgrades to the squad so they could push for a championship next year. But we're still going to cover them. Whether they draft any of them or not, we're going to cover them. Just wanted to give you a heads up on that. So we'll go ahead and get out of here. We appreciate you guys tuning in. The show is on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I'm at NBA D-Will 2-1. Candace, our co-host, she will not be involved much in the draft talk, but we will get her back in here for we're going to do some end-of-the-season grades for the players this season. We're talking about free agent stuff. As news happens, Candace will be back on with us, but she is at CandaceH901. Isaac's going to let you know where you can find him and give us some closing thoughts.
Yeah, man, we didn't get to cover as many prospects as we usually do last year because of how deep the Grizzlies went in the playoffs. That was the first time they had actually gone that deep. So we're a little bit earlier, so we probably can try to get probably 90% in this year because it's much earlier than we usually started. So I think that's a positive if you want to spin it that way for the Grizzlies being out earlier. But the Grizzlies, as David said, man, if it's up to me, I would prefer for them to move all those picks for vets. I think they have enough developmental pieces on the roster, but I know that's not going to be the case. They have 3 picks currently in this draft. They have the 25th pick in the first round. They have the 45th pick in the second round via Minnesota, and they also have their own second round at 56. So sitting on 3 picks right now, man, if I had to guess, I would say they execute at least one of those, if not two, those 2 second-round picks. I think that 25th pick might be one that they attempt to move in a deal for a veteran, man. But it's a fun time of the year, one of my favorite times of the year. Never really felt like I didn't want the Grizzlies to take anybody, but I think, man, it's time to kind of move on. You're a contending team, and you've taken a lot of rookies, got a lot of developmental guys off the bench. I think it's time to get some more vets in there and kind of work on developing the guys that you already have. But, man, you can find the show at Ethos Grizzlies. As David said, go over there and give us a like and a follow. You can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA. We'll definitely be back with 4 more prospects here in the next couple of days, so be on the lookout for that. So until next time, we're gone.